6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei called on those elected to parliament and the Assembly of Experts to act in the interest of Iran and stand against outside influences. Unofficial tallies show reformists and moderates winning many seats. President Hassan Rouhani made last year's nuclear agreement with a group of world powers a key objective of his administration, and some believe the election outcome could be interpreted as support of his policies. United Nations plans to begin aid deliveries today for more than 150,000 Syrians as a cessation of hostilities in Syria stretches into a third day. There have been some claims of violence along the way. Staffan de Mistura, the UN envoy for Syria, speaks about the truce that brought about the ceasefire.
No doubt there will be no shortage of attempts to undermine this process. We are ready for it. We should not be impressed. We should not be overly concerned. We should address it and realize that this is part of any ceasefire and certainly of a cessation of hostilities.
The Syrian opposition umbrella group known as the High Negotiations Committee says 97 groups have promised to take part in the ceasefire. The truce does not apply to the terror groups, the Islamic State, and the Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Nusra Front. Two huge explosions Sunday rocked the center of the Somali town of Baidoa, 245 kilometers west of Mogadishu, killing at least 13. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but the militant group Al-Shabaab has taken responsibility to similar attacks. The explosion came 2 days after two massive explosions killed 25. This is VOA News. An unidentified aircraft attacked a convoy carrying suspected Islamic State fighters near Bani Walid in Libya on Sunday. There was no confirmation about who carried out the attack and whether there was damage or casualties. U.S. officials say U.S. aircraft were not involved, although both U.S. and the Eastern Libyan administration are known to have carried out such attacks in the past. Western officials have expressed growing concern about the presence of Islamic State fighters in Libya. International Organization for Migration says it's scaling up repatriation of African migrants suffering abuse and exploitation. Lisa Schlein has our report.
In its latest operation a few days ago, IOM returned 117 migrants to Burkina Faso, including five women and two children. IOM spokesman Itai Viriri says the migrants tell stories of horrific treatment by militias and blatant exploitation at their places of employment.
We do have examples of young men who are working in construction who, every time they got paid, their accommodation was raided by militias who took whatever money they had. There was no one to then go and try and get these obvious crimes investigated.
Viriri tells VOA that IOM has received testimony from African migrants of being beaten up and threatened with other forms of inhumane treatment. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Voters in Switzerland have rejected a proposal to automatically deport foreign residents convicted of even minor crimes. The initiative put forward by the right-wing Swiss People's Party was rejected Sunday by 59% of the voters. Supporters said it would make Switzerland a safer place. The Swiss government had opposed the measure. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says nine pregnant women who traveled from the U.S. to countries with Zika outbreaks contracted the virus and that one of them had a baby born with birth defects. CDC is following 10 other pregnant women, and Director Dr. Tom Frieden says studies are being done about the link between Zika and microcephaly, a birth defect leaving newborns with small heads and other complications.
We know that Zika and microcephaly are associated, although we do not yet have definitive proof that Zika infection alone is the cause of microcephaly, although the evidence for this is getting stronger by the day.
The CDC is working with the health ministries of Colombia and Brazil, where cases of Zika are in the millions, to find out more about the complications caused by the virus. Get more news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Monday, February 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A demonstration is planned today in Liberia's capital to demand the release of a human rights activist.
We hold for the fact that his arrest is arbitrary, his arrest is unwarranted, and so we are staging a very, very full protest on the premises of the Temple of Justice, who insists that government has no basis for holding Mr. Patrick from the River Central Prison.
Mamba Molu is Vice Chairman for Operations and Mobilization for Liberia's main opposition Congress for Democratic Change Party. An effort is underway to empower working women in Kenya's poor settlements. And a Tanzanian government spokesman gives hard marks to President Magufuli's fight against corruption.
If he leaves office in 100 days, I'm sure it would have left quite a very big impact to the world. Because the number of scandals, the number of corruption, malpractice that have been discovered within the first 100 days is just amazing.
Asa Mwambini is Tanzanian government spokesman. Zimbabwe's MDC opposition criticizes President Mugabe for donating 300 cattle to the African Union. Child and Family Protection Centers set up along European migration route, and minority filmmakers struggle at edges of Hollywood. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's post, and our final Black History Month and African History Facts of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Liberia, a demonstration is planned today, Monday, to demand the release of human rights activist Vandala Patrick, who was arrested by the Liberian government since last Wednesday and charged with sedition and criminal libel. Patrick was arrested after he read a communique on behalf of a consortium of political parties and civil society organizations on February 21st, in which he reportedly accused the Liberian government of hiring assassins to murder the former managing director of the Liberian Petroleum Refining Company, Harry Greaves, and eliminate other political opponents. Mamba Molu is Vice Chairman for Operations and Mobilization for Liberia's main opposition Congress for Democratic Change Party. He says Mr. Patrick must be released immediately because his arrest is a misplaced of aggression of judicial authority.
We believe that Mr. Patrick's arrest is a misplaced aggression of judicial authority because he was a representative of the different political groupings and civil society actors that came together to have that statement released. So we hold for the fact that his arrest is arbitrary, his arrest is unwarranted, and so we are staging a very, very full protest tomorrow on the premises of the Temple of Justice at 8 o'clock in the morning to insist that government has no basis for holding Mr. Patrick from the River Central Prison. Tomorrow's protest is exclusively about the release of Vandala Patrick, who is then held arbitrarily behind bars. Vandala is so ill he cannot even eat, and besides, prison authorities have refused for family members to take food to Mr. Patrick. So Mr. Patrick, as we speak, has started a hunger strike because already who is not allowed to go to him. And he is not comfortable with food coming from prison authorities because of fear that he could be poisoned.
What about people who say that the statement he made was reckless?
He didn't make a reckless statement. What happened is there was a press conference call around the premises of the United States of America Embassy in Monrovia about a series of events taking place in Liberia that returns all to the dark days of the past. The different patterns of politically motivated embargo. You remember there was embargo on the congressional back row of the standard bearer of the Free Democratic Party, Mr. Fayyad Borry. No arrest was made. There was embargo of the human rights activist and the anti-corruption whistleblower, Michael Addison. No arrest was made. In fact, his death was attributed to salt water drowning. And now the latest is the embargo of Mr. Harry A. Greaves. Mr. Patrick was simply releasing a document that was authorized by different political institutions and civil society actors. So to have arrested Mr. Patrick and leave out leaders of these different civil society actors and political institutions is simply unfortunate and is what we consider a misplaced aggression of judicial authority.
Now, how true is it that the lawyers for Mr. Patrick can I post a bond?
That is true. If I am one of the representatives of the institutions working with Councilor Chiawa Gunglo to try to force a bail bond. Every insurance institution we went to neglected to grant a discussion or to even talk about granting a bail bond to Mr. Patrick because all of them expressed fear sort of a written caution coming from the authority of government.
Could it be that perhaps there's a concern that he might flee after a bond is posted for him?
Mandela Patrick is not a politician or is not an activist on the run. There is no question whatsoever as to the integrity of this young man. This is a young man that has few psychological resources, national credibility, national respectability. It's not possible to perceive that he will flee when granted a bail bond. So that is completely out of the question.
Mumba Molu is Vice Chairman for Operations and Mobilization for Liberia's main opposition Congress for Democratic Change Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. A Tanzanian government spokesman says the people have given high marks to President John Magufuli in his effort to clean up corruption in the country. Asa Mwambini says even if Mr. Magufuli would have stepped down after his first 100 days in office, he would have left a very big impact on the world because of the amount of corrupt practices that he uncovered during his first 100 days.
He's the kind of president who has really put himself in the bottom of the problem, and he every day, every minute, working on at least something that paints an image that the president is very seriously fighting out corruption element in government. He has done wonders in the first 100 days, and I can tell you, if he is to leave office in 100 days, I'm sure would have left quite a very big impact to the world, because the number of scandals and number of corruption, malpractice that have been discovered within the first 100 days is just amazing.
How are the ordinary Tanzanians reacting? I mean, there's been a call for ordinary people to say something whenever they see corruption. How are they reacting to this?
Well, you must remember that before President Dr. John Magufuli came into power, Beluni Party, the party that he comes from, had almost lost confidence from the public in terms of a number of people who were thought to be very involved in a bigger scandal. So the only Tanzanian now, it's a bigger talk now that this is the man that we wanted. And he has also painted a very good image for the ruling party, and almost very sure that in future he is the man who possibly would even stand unopposed just because of the record that he has really shown in a very few days. So it's all the relations, because he is the president who has just taken some of the money that were supposed to be spent by the government, you know, in a ceremony that this money should now go to buy more beds at the hospital, you know, more roads should be constructed rather than spending some money to drink for the celebration or government celebration that he thought is not very important. And he is the president who has really gone to address key issues that involves the very people. So the talk is, here is the man.
I mean, is he not concerned that his peers might see him as trying to maybe look too different from the way things normally are done?
Well, there are those who really think that maybe this is just within, say, a few days, he might, you know, he's a new president. Maybe he's just coming up. He's very new to the position. So maybe in the next maybe 3-4 months, he might change. And I can assure you that the way I see it is that he is the president whose temperature keeps up, you know, as days goes. Of course, there are few people who are not very, you know, honest, people who were really used to survive on tips, survives on malpractice, and, you know, based on misusing public funds. Definitely, they won't have a very nice word to him. But largely, the majority of Tanzanians are really quite very happy with the new president.
Asa Mwambini is Tanzania's government spokesman. He was speaking with me from the capital, Dar es Salaam. Today is Monday, February 29th, leap year, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and still to come, Mark Oldman's sports and our final Black History Month and African History Facts of the Day. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. In Kenya, an effort is underway to empower women workers in impoverished settlements with training and other help from the European Union and Oxfam. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi on the challenges these women face as they strive to make a living in Kenya's informal economy.
Paris Odero works intently on one of her designs. The mother of three has been working on a new outfit to please her prospective clients. A tailor for 18 years, The tools of her trade are her sewing machine, needle and thread, and material. Odero is part of a program run by the European Union in partnership with Oxfam dubbed Wezesha, a Swahili word that means enable. Wezesha seeks to improve the lives of small-scale women traders and domestic workers by teaching them business skills. Odero says the training has improved her business.
Before, I was just using my money as I get the money. So at the moment, I know if I get the money, I need to write which amount is I got that very day, what I need to buy, and the remaining one I can keep or I can save.
The program rolled out 4 years ago and has helped 30,000 women across 5 informal settlements in Nairobi. Beatrice Jemurungu is a domestic worker. She earns about $200 a month, barely enough to meet her basic needs.
After undergoing the training, I became proud of my work. I have also learned about reproductive health and the importance of staying healthy. I have also gained business skills since I never knew how to save.
Caroline Wambui, Oxfam's Women's Empowerment Project Manager, says while Kenyan women have made strides over the years, more needs to be done.
Even though we have a very progressive constitution, we still face a challenge in implementation. For instance, you'll find small-scale traders pay for services that they don't receive, and the women domestic workers do not receive, almost half of them do not receive minimum wage.
For Beatrice Jemurungu, the new skills she has acquired will help her earn more for her family. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
In Zimbabwe, the Morgan Tsvangirai-led opposition MDC party has strongly criticized President Robert Mugabe's gesture of goodwill after donating 300 cattle to the African Union Foundation. At the end of his tenure as AU chairman, President Mugabe promised to donate the cattle as a way of dissuading the African continent from over-reliance on Western donations, which he claimed came with strings attached. But MDCT spokesman Ober Gutu says the president is well aware that Zimbabwe is gripped by a severe drought, which has already claimed thousands of cattle, while millions of people need food assistance.
As the MDC, we find it very strange and also very suspicious why President Mugabe would donate 300 cows to the African Union at a time that Zimbabwe needs about $1.6 billion to feed no less than 6 million Zimbabweans who are facing the specter of devastating drought and impending starvation. We're actually surprised why you would even want to donate Mombes. Instead of having those 300 cows donated to the AU, like they say, charity begins at home. Why should you want to donate 300 cows to the AU when Zimbabwe is facing one of the most severe droughts in living memory? Really, this is a total shame.
But Mr. Gutu, some would argue that these beasts came from well-wishers, not from the president himself.
Even if the beasts come from well wishes, even if the mombes don't belong to Mugabe himself, but we are saying, why would you want to feed your neighbor's children when your own children are starving? It doesn't make sense. You want them to believe that there's something more to this gift caught uncaught than meets the eye. Those mombes actually should be sold promptly while they're still fat, and the money should actually be used to buy maize urgently, which maize should then be distributed equitably to the starving villagers out there in the countryside.
Are you going to challenge this in any way?
Look, it's difficult to challenge because legally, you can't even go to court to say why has President Mugabe and this ZANU-PF zealots decided to give mombes to the AU.
That was spokesman Ober Gutu of the Morgan Tsvangirai-led MDC. He was speaking from Harare with reporter Jonga Kandimiri of VOA Zimbabwe program. The United Nations Refugee Agency and UN Children's Fund are setting up 20 centers to support and protect children and families fleeing war and persecution as they move across Europe's well-worn migration routes. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The so-called Blue Dot Hubs are intended to be a safe place for children and families facing many risks once they arrive in Greece and move along the Balkan migratory route, which includes the former Republic of Macedonia, Serbia, Croatia, and Slovenia. A huge blue dot identifies the locations as places where children can play and they and their families can receive vital services, protection, and counseling in a single location. Volker Turk, the UNHCR Assistant High Commissioner for Protection, says families on the move are very vulnerable, especially children. He says many are unaccompanied and others become separated from their families. He says children are at risk of sickness, trauma, sexual exploitation, trafficking, and violence. Turk says he became particularly conscious of the fear gripping refugee children when he was at the Greek-Macedonian border a couple of weeks ago.
You immediately are confronted with children who wander about. It's sometimes cold and dark, and these children either lost their parents on the way. They got put into buses, which leads to family separation. They wander around in a very unfamiliar, dark environment sometimes because it was evening.
Turk says since the first Blue Dot Hubs began operating 2 weeks ago, about 40 to 50 separated children are being reunited with their parents every day. He says all 20 hubs will be operational in the next 3 months. UN agencies report women and children now make up nearly 60% of those who travel from Turkey to Greece by sea, compared to 27% in September. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The red carpet was rolled out and the stars gathered last night in Hollywood for the annual Academy Awards, or Oscars. Many have criticized the lack of diversity among this year's nominees, but as Mike O'Sullivan reports, there is another side of the movie industry that is more diverse than the Hollywood players on display at the Oscars.
Cameroon-born actress and producer Constance Ijeoma is showing her film Ben and Ara at film festivals worldwide. It has a 2016 release date, so is not up for an Oscar. The film is a complex love story that tackles many themes.
Interracial, intercultural, interreligious. I think, you know, people can relate to all or one of those three things. So it is very relevant for our times.
Ben and Ara tells the tale of two graduate students, one an atheist and the other a Muslim. It deals with relationships, faith, family, and cultural tensions. A film called Echo Park stars Tony Okomboa, a British-Nigerian actor and producer. It's a romantic drama set in a changing neighborhood of Los Angeles that deals with universal themes of love and conflict.
I just want the story to be the important part, and the actors can be interchanged with any culture.
The 2014 historical drama Selma told the story of American civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. It won an Oscar for its original song, Glory. Its director, Ava DuVernay, is distributing Okomboa's film through a collective that she founded. She is a rarity in Hollywood, a mainstream director who is African-American and female.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Academy Awards nominees, class of 2015.
This year's Oscar nominees are overwhelmingly white. Tony Okomboa says the problem goes beyond individual movies.
While there were some films that could have been recognized this year, I still feel the bigger issue is there's not enough films being made that have diverse characters in them.
Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa. Supposedly here is Marco Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with athletics. Kenyans Bedan Karoki and Mary Washira prevailed at the world best 10-kilometer road race in San Juan, Puerto Rico on Sunday. In an exciting sprint for the finish line among Kenyans, Karoki pipped Leonard Barsotom to win the men's race. Both were credited with an identical time of 27 minutes and 42 seconds. Stephen Sambu was 6 seconds behind, while Philip Kiprono and John Mwangangi registered an identical time of exactly 28 minutes. Meanwhile, Mary Washira triumphed in the women's race in 31 minutes and 49 seconds. Ethiopian Olympic 10,000-meter bronze medalist Belianesh Oljira was 2 seconds behind. Kenyans Veronica Nyarua, Lynette Masai, and Monica Ngige Wanjiku followed in that order. In Japan, Kenyan Hela Kiprop and Ethiopian Feyisa Lelisa triumphed at the Tokyo Marathon on Sunday. Kiprop improved her personal best by over 2 minutes when she clocked 2 hours, 21 minutes and 27 seconds, and in the process set the women's course record. Ethiopian Tirfet Tsegei held the previous mark at 2 hours, 22 minutes and 23 seconds since 2014. On Sunday, Ethiopian Amane Gobena was runner-up. Kenyan two-time world champion Edna Kiplagat was third. She was followed by Ethiopia's Abera Kebede, then defending champion Behane Dibaba. Meanwhile, Ethiopia's Feyisa Lelisa clocked 2 hours, 6 minutes and 56 seconds to win the men's race. Kenyans followed Bernard Kipyego, then defending champion Dickson Chumba. Ugandan Olympic champion Stephen Kiprotich was fourth, ahead of Kenyan two-time world champion Abel Kirui. Turning to football, the Confederation of African Football, CAF President Issa Hayatou, congratulates Swiss-Italian Gianni Infantino on being elected FIFA president in Zurich, Switzerland on Friday. Hayatou assures Infantino of Africa's full support. The election outcome was decided in the second round of the ballot. Infantino amassed 115 votes to Bahrain's Sheikh Salman Al Khalifa's 88. Jordan's Prince Ali Al Hussein got 4 votes, while Frenchman Jerome Champagne got no vote in the second round. Finally, Egypt's pharaohs humbled their visitors, the Stallions of Burkina Faso, 2-0 in a friendly in Borg El Arab Stadium in Alexandria on Saturday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
It's time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 29th, leap year. On this day in 1940, Hattie McDaniels became the first African-American to be nominated for and win an Academy Award. She won the Best Actress in a supporting role for her portrayal of Mammy in the movie Gone with the Wind. Also on this day in 1972, Hank Aaron signed a $200,000 contract, becoming the first player in Major League Baseball to get that amount of money. Today, some baseball players make as much as $24 million a year. In May 1970, Aaron became the first player in baseball to record 500 home runs and 3,000 hits. He is best known, however, for breaking Babe Ruth's record of 714 career home runs, which he established in 1935. And on this day in African history, in 1988, Archbishop Desmond Umpilo Tutu of South Africa was arrested for demonstrating outside the Houses of Parliament in contravention of South African laws. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 29th. Congratulations to Stephen Kekula of Senko of Monrovia, Liberia, and Mumbani Chidi AC of Bauchi in Bauchi State, Nigeria. You are the winners of our February 26th question. Who did Mike Tyson beat in 1989 to become the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world? The answer, Frank Bruno of England. And that concludes our Black History and African History Facts and Contest for 2016. Thank you for listening and participating. We'll see you again in 2017, God willing.
Get up, stand up,
get up,
stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Life is your right.
Get up.
That's it for this Monday, February 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Owoman, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very productive week.
Next on Let's Talk. School uniforms. Do you support a school dress code? Join host Sande Shomari and his guests discussing school uniforms. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA News is always at the tip of your fingers.
All the news you want about Africa and the world.
Day and Night is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.